Okay, so we potentially may see women, or maybe we've been in that circumstance where we have had our idols, and we may still do have our idols. And Table Talk magazine from Ligonier just recently, this was July, had a section in their devotional about keeping away from idols, and 1 John 5:21, little children, keep yourselves from idols, and that was one of the verses that we looked at through our lesson. In essence, there's a commandment against idolatry, the giving of worship or ascription of highest value to anything other than the Lord God Almighty. Idolatry, and in fact, lies at the heart of all other sins. Mm-hmm. Before human beings transgress any other law, Paul tells us in Romans 1:18-32, they fail to honor God as God, to set him above all else, and fail to thank him, turning instead to other deities. If we do not honor the Lord alone as God, we will fail to keep every other commandment. Mm-hmm. And John Calvin talks about the internal attitudes that we have, and he says, the affections of the heart, that he alone may be spiritually worshipped, and the expression before my face, because although some people secretly turn aside to false worship and cherish their errors within their own bosoms, may be able to evade the eyes of men, yet their hypocrisy and treachery will not escape the notice of God. And there are some culturally acceptable things like money and power and fame. Still, if anything else comes first in our lives and affections but our Creator, we are committing adultery. So it's a serious thing, and as women, we have all kinds of idols, and not only women, but men generally. And we were encouraged to, in our questions, to think about some of those idols that we worship. And so you can imagine in your mind some of those idols. And I thought, well, what is it that we worship as older women that could be different than the younger women? And have we experienced any of those things as younger women? Are our idols as older women, how are they different than the younger women?
I don't know. I think we all want the same things. And if you're attached to the world, you're going to want the materialism and all of that. Even listening to complaints, I guess you'd say, or concerns of women. Everybody thinks their situation is different, but we all have the same concerns and the same, you know, oh, my husband didn't do this, or the grass is always greener on the other side, that kind of thing. I don't know. I think we're people.
I think the tendency is for women and men, but especially women, I think, who tend to be more sensitive. As you get older, health mm-hmm. and fitness can be more of a thing. Fitness related to health, not so much, oh, I want to look the best, but related to health. And also, as not only your parents' generation, but now people of your own generation start dying, other people can become too important, whether it be family like your husband, or just, oh my gosh, they could be gone. You know, they could die. So I think other people can become more important than when you're younger, especially thinking about your own death coming sooner. Yeah, your own mortality. I think we can tend to kind of move some of our idols that way. But that could be true for young people also, according to what they have gone through in their lives. Mm-hmm. But young people, as a rule, especially I think of young mothers, I don't think they're thinking so much about that. They're thinking about their family and all of those everyday things like that. So that would be the only thing that occurred to me that would be different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think young moms, a lot of times, desire more things like me time, you know, relief from the stress of the constant, you know, so it's more like, I just want to be in a place where I have peace, where people aren't knocking on the bathroom door, you know, I want me time, I, you know, all these things, I want the perfect house like this woman over here has. And then as you get older and you're past that, it's kind of the opposite because you have the me time and you don't necessarily want it. So now you're like wanting more significance, you know, because you don't have people knocking down your door all the time. You know, you want significance or purpose. What do I do with my time? You know, my skills, which is one of the reasons we're all here, right? So we can end well.
My older son often says, you don't have to do mom, or you don't have to offer. And I say, no, you don't understand. I need to do this. I think we need to be needed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's a good response. I need to be needed.
I think we hope that's the need of everybody.
If anybody's at the point where they miss somebody knocking on their bathroom door, get a dog.
Yeah, there were some kids sometimes.
What? There's nothing I ever missed. But it all comes down to self as the worst idol.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it does.
Because, I love having time to myself and not having to be anywhere and, you know... But it's always that whatever is heart is wicked and deceitful and all that, and it's usually
true
self on the throne.
But that need will never be satisfied only through Christ.
Right.
You can go searching all around for people, whatever, things, but you're not going to find it only in Christ.
Yeah, and you can see. I mean, you can see it in the world today, and that's. Like I was listening to John MacArthur, and he was this morning, and he was talking about that, how even the church is moving more towards the worldly things, and you can see how, I mean, suicides are up, depression's up, people are on more medication, you know, on and on and on, because they're not fine. They think they know what they want, and they're not finding what they want, and they just keep searching, and you, like you said, Linda, that's there's only one thing that's going to fill that hole.
Right, and that so depicts some of these images that we had in the book here about that. And I just want to mention what Joel Beakey said in his commentary on the Johannine epistles. We keep ourselves from idols by abiding in a right relationship with God, which entails living through the means of grace in the shadow of Calvary. So we, you know, if we don't have that lens in our lives, looking through Calvary, looking at the cross in our events, the idolatry will offer its attractions, and we won't be able to see them for, we will be able to see them for what they truly are when we're looking through Calvary. To avoid idols and remain focused on the one true God, we remember the cross in its revelation of God's holiness and mercy, participate in the ordinary means of grace of hearing the word preached, receiving the sacraments and prayer, engage in Christian fellowship, and so forth. If we do these things, we will keep ourselves from idols and grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. So it's probably a nice closure, but I think we need to, you know, think about looking at the events of our lives through the cross. And one of the things I wanted to bring up that may be different for us than for younger women, don't you see how women idolize their children?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's something that is of a concern to me. Yes, you love your children, but you put your children above your husband. You put your children above other things. You have misplaced them in your lives.
You've got the children with a small G. God, you know, God's with a small G. You know, and not so, you know, not so much in the church, hopefully, certainly, but that's what I would see out. You know, I mean, the public schools and
oh yes,
you know, they Actually, I can tell you a quick story. I had a little class with some kids in our neighborhood, I want to be loving and kind and use the right, you know, words, affirming words and all that I have to work on. But, like, I always say there's no mistakes when you're crafting, there's just opportunities for creativity and all this. But I think I used the word, because it was upside down or something, I said, this is what happens if you do it wrong, you do this. And she went, we don't use that word. And I had to think for a minute, what did I say?
Wrong.
We don't use the word wrong. And I mean, it's not a stretch to talk about, well, then there's never such thing as a sin then.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So these are some things that we can think about to bring up with younger moms that we see. And maybe there are things that they don't see in their lives, you know, and we have maybe a different perspective on that. So keep that in mind. And it's really the heart that causes us to idolize various things. So what would you say the heart is? What does the heart refer to in the scriptures?
Mind.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thoughts, our desires.
Yep.
Motives,
inclinations,
mm-hmm.
your feelings,
mm-hmm. passions,
mm-hmm.
yes.
appetites, even intellect mm-hmm.
yeah.
can be a part of that as well. And sometimes, if we don't get our way, how do people react? If you don't get your way, if you don't get your idol, what do?
Frustrated.
Angry.
Mm-hmm. Withdraw.
Temper tantrum.
Temper tantrum.
Yeah. Like a 2-year-old.
Yeah. Pity parties. I'm really good at that.
Feeling offended.
Confusion.
Bitterness.
Confusion.
Yeah.
Bitterness.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we did look at some of those common idols in people's lives. You mentioned health. What else?
Mm-hmm.
How you look.
Control.
Ah, that's mine. Or others' approval.
I should say the illusion of control.
Yeah.
But we're always seeking it, but we never really
have
it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. People pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Status and education.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I see that a lot here. In Florida, more so than I did in Illinois.
Oh, I thought you meant at the church.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Not at the church.
Yeah.
Just
okay.
Florida in general, okay. Just from the neighbors asking, well, what did you do on your job?
Mm.
Yes. You know, I was a controller. I was this or that, you know, important sounding.
Well, that's their significance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, if you don't know the Lord, you retire from your job where you got all your significance. Now what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even when you do know the Lord, like I remember when our mom passed away, there was a lot I was involved in her life, and all of a sudden that was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what do I do now?
Right.
Like, what's my job? You know, I mean, I had a job.
Yeah.
I was working a job, but like,
what's your purpose?
Yeah, yeah. And I was thankful that I was a Christian because that didn't let, you know, that doesn't last. There's a gap there, but you realize, okay, that was my purpose then.
Mm-hmm.
God has another purpose now.
Part of that's grieving too.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I went through lots of years of caregiving for mom and 3 aunts.
Mm.
And there is, when it's over, there is, I think it's a grieving.
Yeah.
Really. But then, you know, God brings other ministries into your life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a while before we sold our house, and I used to just go to the house and, you know, like, mm-hmm. take care of the yard and,
yeah.
do, and
yeah.
just because mm-hmm. that was the
she
routine.
Was there and that was
yeah.
where you were. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh. That's kind of a challenging thing to think about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Referring to controlling, I have a sister that tried to control all her children.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one, the others kind of rejected it, and different things happened, but her last one, her first daughter wouldn't come under that and stay under that. Her last daughter was so under mom's control, she started never going out, not being around people,
mm-hmm.
has a fear of that, and still lives with my sister, and my sister doesn't want her to be there.
But
she created her mom.
And now she's kind of settled with a 21-year-old.
Does she realize? Does your sister realize that it's
her problem? She did it. I don't think so. I'm going to have to ask my other niece what she thinks. She's tried to get her sister out and about. Just but that's a sad case. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when we don't get our idols, we fall into these areas of emotional pain, like... anybody want to share something maybe that has been for them? We did kind of talk about that already, but control.
Talk about what?
Are you talking about the unbiblical refuges?
Yeah.
False saviors?
Yeah, yeah.
That one sentence.
Yeah. Which question?
False gods. Six.
Question six.
I think the key in that question is unbiblical refuge. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there are times in all of our lives you go through seasons where you may need to pull back. And I know my corner of the world has always been reading since I've been a child. Mm-hmm. You know, just like, okay, I need time. As long as that's a short-lived thing and you're taking it, I don't think that's unbiblical, is when you choose to ignore what's really going on or choose to rejoin the body, your family, whatever, and hide in those and use those things as an excuse to not be part of, I think that it really becomes an unbiblical issue.
That's a good thought.
Yeah.
I know after my husband passed away, it was vegging out in front of the TV.
Oh, yeah.
Watching stuff I didn't even like, or just flipping channels. Mm-hmm. And reading.
Just withdrawing.
Yeah, just withdrawing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And after a few months, it was like, this can't work. Yeah. And that's when I turned off cable. And then when I moved, I didn't even take the TV because it's too addictive for me.
Mm-hmm. Very convenient.
Yeah.
And then just recently, maybe the last 4 months, I started looking at my reading habits, and they weren't bad per se, but they were just escape, like cozy mysteries and things like that. They were worthless. You know, and reading scriptures about what you're supposed to spend time on, they didn't qualify. So now I'm trying to get better on the reading part.
Put that text on the end.
I think there's a balance with that, though, too, because most of my reading is going to be, we have a lot of homework to do, we have a lot of lessons and that. But then I call it, like, quote-unquote, pleasure reading. Uh-huh. And there are some, I haven't done it in a while, but there are, I can get in. Our sister was down on vacation over a year ago, I think, and she recommended this book that she had read. And I mostly wanted to read it so I could talk to her about it.
Right? Uh-huh.
But it was a good story. It was a good book. And, you know, so I think, like, to your point, there is a balance with anything, even. Like, even with the TV. I did the same thing. I dropped when TV price went up, I dropped it. But I have streaming, and it's cheaper, but I can control that, kind of, you know, so.
Yeah, I realize, though, I can't.
Yeah,
and what? To know that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yes. Yes. So, if we look at this picture on page 61, I kind of had a hard time with these pictures. I had to talk to my husband about this. I said, what does that mean? And he said, well, your heart is distorted here. Mm-hmm. Things are not in order.
Right.
Okay, thank you. I looked at it and went,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't get it.
So your heart is just distorted, and pieces are missing because things are out of balance for you. But then...
Yeah. On 62, it's not distorted.
No, it's not distorted.
But it's bad.
But those things are not controlling your life.
Oh, okay.
Okay, they're little. You're learning how to replace those things with biblical and godly things. But then, if you allow those things again to creep up, take over, and you have replaced some of these, instead of biblical things, you have these refuge saviors that are drugs or alcohol or men, or it could be any number of things that will cause that heart to become distorted again.
So it's kind of like, I'm really glad you explained that, but it's kind of like what we were just saying, because within the heart it's the same things, but it's when it gets out of balance.
Yes. Right.
Can be good, but taken to extreme.
Right.
Yeah.
And the first one, when they become your idols, it shows these are the emotions that can result.
Yeah.
And then in that last page, if they really are causing those emotions to build up, these are the outward signs.
Right. It goes into action.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that really helps.
Thank you.
Yes. Oh, my goodness, yes.
I just looked at them and moved on.
I did too. Yes. I read them.
I don't understand those at all.
I also wanted to mention that Stuart Scott is from ACBC, American Biblical
he was a pastor
at Masters or at Grace Community Church, and he's on the seminary staff also, and he's written books with Martha Peace as well. So I didn't know who he was. I had to look him up. So he does have some good credibility there.
Spiritual disciplines.
He might have. I don't remember if that was on the list of things that I looked up. But as we turn
with me.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Okay.
Donald Whitney.
Yeah. As we turn over to page 66, I'm hoping that some of you who have been through the Psalm 119 study would recognize some of these verses and identify with some of those verses. Does anyone have any of those that are especially important to them, or that you especially like?
I don't know if it's in one of these.
If it's one of the idolatry things, I know there are other verses in there that we really appreciate.
I found comfort. I wrote this in. I just, your word counsels me. That really touched me. That's where we get our best counsel from, the Word of God. Mm-hmm.
The whole psalm was filled with that. I put verse 15, I will meditate on your precepts and fix my eyes on your ways, and I will delight in your statutes. I will not forget your word.
One that comes to mind is not on here, but there's one similar. It is good that I've been afflicted, that I might learn your statutes. Mm-hmm. Three times having COVID. So that was my verse. Because I have no excuse not to be in the Word and read and pray and everything, because I was home a lot. But here's one that's mentioned on 67. Trouble and anguish have come upon me, yet thy commandments are my delight.
And when I looked at that verse, I thought of Myrna. That's Myrna's testimony.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Just, I was there last night because I delivered a meal, which I gave her a good chuckle because I had texted her and said, I'm supposed to bring a meal. This was Wednesday. And she texted, and I said, I don't cook, so, here's the Carrabba's menu. And she texted me back, and she says, I'm in excruciating pain, but you just made me laugh. And so we postponed it because she was in the hospital, but I was able to deliver last night, so I got some time. She looks good, and the pain is, for now, under control, but she does have a path going forward, thank God. You know,
yes.
She's going to see a PT about exercises specific
for
work,
yes.
And also a pain management specialist. So,
good.
Yeah.
Good.
And I talked to her this morning, and I said, I know you're probably not going, but I just wanted to see if you wanted me to pick you up.
Yeah.
And she said she just woke up. I said, well, that's good. And
yeah.
She's
yeah.
Asleep.
Well, that's
yes.
We were talking about. They prescribe some pain med. I forget the name of it. And I said, if nothing else, I said, take it so you can sleep. And she's like, you're right.
Yep.
Because
yeah.
She wants to avoid them. But
she says the pain was minimal when she did get some sleep. So.
Good.
Myrna.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's good she woke up, too.
especially if she's not used to taking anything,
yeah.
Then you could, really sleep. Now, how is Pete doing? Because she had said before that he had his fatigue was really, really bad. So is someone helping?
Their daughter came too, Marlena, with her daughter, so the granddaughter and the little dog, they came to visit. And Pete said, I have a ladder out on the lanai. Would you put it in the garage? Because he just doesn't have the energy yet, you know. But he's working on it. Mm-hmm. And hard for a man, you know, to admit.
Yeah.
Marlene and I put the ladders in the garage. I just said to her, if you need anything else, I'm around the corner. You know, mm-hmm. So,
So, what is your heart set on? Well, one of the things I've thought about in regard, and I agree, in heaven, but we're talking about God-honoring heart desires, and Martha Peace tells us that the wife's responsibility is to ask God for that passion and diligently to seek God through his written word, and has a responsibility to cultivate a grateful heart or a grateful attitude and thankfulness to God regardless of circumstances. So how do you cultivate? How do you cultivate thankfulness?
Pray for it. You confess your ungratitude. And you have to, at least I have to, constantly pray for that. Especially, and you know, you go through your times, well, oh, it's going great, I don't need to face this. You know, hey, I've overcome this, but guess what? That's when you think you've done that. Then you get another onslaught.
Rearing its ugly head.
Yeah.
You think you stand. What did you say?
How do you cultivate?
Practice it.
Yes.
Well, be thankful
through
for
prayer.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I just start saying all the small things, and it just kind of overwhelms, you know, the graciousness, the kindness of God, his loving kindness.
Mm-hmm. Well, if he's sovereign, and then I've been a Christian a long time, and in the last few years started to see this, because I would complain about everything. Everything has to be sifted through his loving hands. He is good, and he does good. Mm-hmm. So even the bad stuff, it's like, all right, what am I supposed to learn from this? And be thankful for it. Be thankful for all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get your eyes off yourself and put them on Christ.
Right. Mm-hmm. When I think about the word cultivate, I think about a garden.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're constantly, like Kathy, you're constantly pulling out the weeds, constantly praying. You're constantly tending to your thoughts. You're fertilizing it. Oh, yeah. Reading the word.
Really
and, yeah.
Well, even the good stuff. I mean, if you have a plant, again, you have a plant and that one thing is going like crazy, you tend to think, oh, that's good. It's growing great.
Yes. Pruning.
It needs to be pruned a lot more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one thing that concerns me. I call it spiritual warfare. It's like I don't want myself to love anything more than God. Mm-hmm. And that's a real battle there. I mean, then I'm just like, okay, where's my focus? What is that taking me down? What road? You know, am I not trusting God in this situation?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a back and forth a lot in thought life. And I can see myself, Lord, guard my thoughts this day. And it's like I confess something before him. I said, Lord, this is wrong thinking, and this is a sin. So it's like, then it's like a lifting off, you know, in a refocus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like refocus my attitude the other morning. And it's very humbling. And I find I do that many times in prayer with Dennis and I. And, you know, just be having the right attitude. And what a difference that made.
Mm-hmm. So you're recognizing your sin.
Yes.
And you're putting it off.
Yes.
And you're putting on,
yes,
that heart of gratitude.
Yes.
That thankfulness, that appreciation for everything that God has done, and recognizing, like you said, Bobby, that he's sovereign in everything, and that his hand is a part of all of that.
That this from Darren Roberts, what's his name is, preach to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like if you can recognize the wrong thoughts or the wrong, you know, you're feeling like you're gonna just preach to yourself.
Yeah,
you know, this is wrong, and what should I put on?
Mm-hmm. That's the one I remember out of that list. It's like, soul, you deserve hell.
Yeah.
And look what you have, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like, wow.
Well, we do tend to do that. Oh, I don't deserve that, or I do,
yeah,
deserve this, or, you know, this isn't fair.
Yeah.
What's fair? Hell. You know?
Yeah, mm-hmm, that's right.
Yeah, you don't want fair.
That's right.
Well, and I think, too, looking at our prayers and how much are dependence prayers, how much do we pray, do we ask God for our needs?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I can cook the meal, but Lord, would you show me what to cook? Or just the little things, and then you see his answer. So then also, how did he answer it? And then you can be grateful for that. Oh, I had in my mind to do this, but you led me this way. Thank you. So I think to just needs that we really can meet on our own, but go ahead and ask. He's there listening, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And then watch for the answer.
I think that's really important, because if we don't ask, and we receive, we don't recognize it as coming from God.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can't be grateful.
Every good gift comes from God.
Because we thought, look what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, something else I think that's important that we recognize is we need to build contentment in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Be thankful for everything that we have, because every good and perfect gift is coming down from the Father of lights, and he gives us everything that we need for pertaining to life and godliness,
mm-hmm,
through the true knowledge of him who called you according to his
glory and excellence.
So, okay.
When I was a kid, we lived next to these people, and we didn't see the woman much, but then they paid off their house, and she come out every morning and say, my house, I just love my house, and she'd run up and hug her house, and it was but, you know, I can understand how you're in it for 20 or 30 years paying on it, but, you know, that was kind of the extreme.
It's funny, because when you said that, I was like, I sometimes walk through my house and I go, I love this house, but I'm so undeserving, and thank you, Lord, for this,
mm-hmm,
gift. Because
yeah.
It is, it's such a blessing, but it's...
Well, it was so traumatic.
Left an impression, didn't it?
You know, it's just crazy.
So, and that's a subtle way, you know, that people can make idols of those types of things, and they don't even realize it.
I know. I've always struggled with contentment, and then moving from Canada to Florida, I mean, it's been such a blessing, but in a way, we had a beautiful home there, kind of the dream home, and we had to sell it quickly, you know, and instead of sometimes being thankful for that, like, I mean, we have a beautiful condo. It's not that. It's not the same.
But the thing you probably go back to is you're free.
Yeah, I know, but still, there's that always that lack of contentment, whatever it could be, like in your home or whatever. You look at that thing, oh, you know, could I don't have that anymore.
Mm. You know, okay, so that's something I've been holding back saying. But in all of this, as we get older, we need to guard against the what-ifs in our lives.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. you're putting too much dependence on yourself mm-hmm. that if I had, yeah. this would have been.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that itself can be a god and very self-centered. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to guard against going back with regrets, mm-hmm. moving forward with faith, that God has put us right where He wants us to be, and He is in control, mm-hmm. and we are not.
Right. Look what God has done in our lives. In Scripture it says that the in the desert they wanted to go back to
Egypt.
Egypt had onions.
They were in slavery.
They were slaves.
They were in slavery, but they were looking at what they left.
Yeah, it was great.
They had fruit.
Yeah. But aren't you in slavery when you have an idol too?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yes,
you are.
Yep. Sure.
Yeah.
You are.
Yep. So we need to set those aside and help our younger moms see their idols and set them aside as well.
And it's like a lack of faith too.
It is. Mm-hmm.
You're not trusting God that given you and done what's best.
Sure. Yeah.
So, like Vicki says, we keep ourselves from idols by abiding in a right relationship with God, mm-hmm. which entails living through the means of grace in the shadow of Calvary, so that when idolatry offers its attractions, we will be able to see them for what they truly are. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to chapter 8. Okay, some of us have talked about being workers at home, and that is, it is a command that older women are to teach younger women to be workers at home. And she says a godly wife is organized and works hard to operate her home with the least possible chaos, creates an atmosphere that's optimistic and joyful. God has always intended for the home to be the wife's domain. Unfortunately, that's not always how we see it in society. And I think we can get caught up in that. Younger moms can get caught up in that dream-looking house or organized closets and vacuuming out your shelves and, you know, doing all of these things, which are good, but can put a lot of stress in our lives when we try to emulate other people. Covet what they have and we don't have, and so we need to keep ourselves focused.
And isn't that where, like, Facebook and Instagram and a lot of those, they see pictures of the perfect home and, you know, well, why can they do it and I can't do it?
Yeah, and I think it puts pressure on the husbands to provide more money, and I think as wives we need to help our husbands protect that money. And I know I didn't do that when I was an immature young married Christian woman, and so I would encourage other moms to protect that, be content with what you have. Sometimes on page 73, on the question 2, she talks about sinful motives and versus godly motives about returning to work. Mm-hmm. To get all the stuff that your husband can't provide or doesn't provide, or God doesn't want you to have. If a wife is working or thinking of returning to work, she should examine her motives. What is it she really wants? What is her heart set on? Is it to avoid becoming a non-person? Is it more material things? Is it wanting to be out from under the demands of childcare? Is it to relieve her husband from his responsibility to work? None of these motives are for the glory of God. They are self-serving and sinful. Godly motives would be learning to be content, Philippians 4:11. Gratitude to the Lord for what she does have, and in whatever you do, in thought, word, and deed, do all for the glory of God. In Colossians 3:17, whatever you do in word or deed, do all to the glory of God, which is very similar to that, I think, Colossians 3:23. Staying at home, organizing a clean, well-run household is a major biblical emphasis in the God-given ministry of the wife. So we've read of some sinful motives, and we've read some godly motives. Can anybody identify with either of those?
We had a friend years ago, and she, her husband struggled always to make a living for the family, and she had young children, and she thought it would be good for her to work nights opposite him. I think she wanted to help him. And so she was going to go get, it was kind of a menial job, and she was going to be working opposite him so that, you know, he could be home to take care of the kids. And I asked her, I said, what does your husband say about that? And she was like, well, I didn't ask. I just, you know, she was just charging ahead. And I was like, well, you really need to ask him, because that's undermining him. That's really undermining him as a provider. Mm-hmm. What you're saying to him is, what you're providing is not good enough, and I have to supplement that. And she was kind of like, oh. And she did ask her husband, and he didn't want her to work. You know, she thought she was helping, but she wasn't really helping. Mm-hmm. She was taking control. And so she let that go for many years after that. So
that's kind of the answer to question three. How would you have counseled a woman? I mean, that wasn't the question, but that's how I would have phrased it. How would you counsel a woman who is in that circumstance? And I think that was a good thing to ask. What does your husband think about this?
Right, because it's his decision. I mean, sometimes husbands do want their wives to work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she handles that. But I also knew another woman years ago, and they truly were, her husband was trying to break into a new career of being a surveyor, and he was making, like, practically minimum wage. And so he worked a second job at Publix at night stocking shelves. So he was doing all he could, and they still had trouble, but she had the cleanest house. Her kids, she actually bought powdered milk because she figured that was actually cheaper. She watched a friend's child for a few hours a day so she could be home, and she was so content. And I always think of her, and I just admire her, because she would make her own curtains, so, you know, like stencil things on the walls to make it look pretty. Her house was neat, very minimalist. She never complained. She supported her husband and did whatever she could to make work what he provided and do it willingly. And I was like, wow.
That's a real biblical model, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yes. I think of her a lot.
And she is doing what the answer here is about making sacrifices for the budget. Looking at sales at the grocery store, planning your meals around what's on sale, working toward the debt reduction, making an honest appraisal of their income and seeing what they could afford to do and what they were able to do and how she was able to stretch the budget.
Mm-hmm. I think we, a lot of times, we think things are necessities and they're really not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wants versus needs.
We yeah. can do without a lot
greeds.
Of things.
Wants versus greeds. Mm. Yeah. No.
Need versus greed.
Yeah. Right. Need versus greed.
Yeah. It's tag team.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's why people have yard sales. Get rid of all the stuff in the house that is not necessary.
Yeah, yeah. It's
true. As opposed yeah, to having storage units oh, where they keep all the extras.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. right.
Just
right.
in case you ever need it.
Well, that was one of the things we learned when we moved to Florida. We really didn't need as much stuff as we had.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I even find myself, like, we were raised, my mom was raised in a recession time, so she was used to making, pinching a pen. What did Dad used to say? He's like, you could pinch a quarter so hard the eagle would cry or something like that, you know? Like, she just was really good at stretching the budget. And, you know, she used to get clothes from Goodwill. My sister went to school one time with a maxi coat, quote unquote, and the girls all made fun of her and said, you know, like that was somebody's father's, something like that. They knew right away. But anyway, long story short was she was really good at doing that. And, you know, sometimes we as kids, we kind of get made fun of for it, but it was like she was raised with that mentality, the recession. And it's funny how it carries over. Like, I find myself sometimes, I'll go to Sam's. I'm one person. I don't really need to buy this that's at Sam's. But at the same time, it's like, well, is it a good deal? Or am I just, you know? Or I'll get something that I really, really like. Okay, it's a pair of sneakers. I really like these. Well, they're going to wear it. Maybe I need to buy another pair now, too, because I need them as a backup. And they're yeah. yeah. So it's, you got to really... watch, it can be a fine line between, I really like this, so I need to buy another one, or is it a good deal, kind of thing.
It will be interesting. This, with our economy the way it is, is an opportunity to really share with young people who have not gone through this before.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That it is necessary to budget, to think twice about, you know, not giving your kids everything they want and all those things.
Yeah. Well, they don't even teach that, although I think DeSantis was trying to get that brought into the schools. They don't teach, like, how to balance a budget.
No. I think it did go in.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So that they're teaching.
I think it did go in.
Yeah.
But it takes discipline.
Oh, for sure.
Many
for sure.
people know how to budget, but it takes discipline to stick with it and
learn how to be resourceful with what you have.
To buy things on sale with a coupon, you know, and all those things that I know I had to do.
Yeah. Yeah. You could take that to the extreme, though, too. When I worked in the grocery store, I remember somebody coming in with a coupon, and we didn't have whatever it was because it was brand new. They put all the coupons out before they even the stuff was available in the store. And this lady was insistent to me. And she's like, I don't know what it is, but I have a coupon and I want it.
It should only be
really?
Things that you really
yeah.
want.
Yeah.
I gave my son a gift one day and he goes, I don't want it, Mom. I said, how do you know you didn't open it? Because you bought it on sale.
I understand that.
Ingratitude.
Yeah.
And it's important for parents to teach that from a young age. Because I know for me, we had like very little money when I was raising my kids. And it forced us to really watch every penny. And being a homeschool mom, I had to take my kids with me to the grocery store. And they'd go, oh, here are paper towels. No. Look at the signs. Which one is less per, you know, per paper towel? And so they all learn to do that, you know. So then now they're older. I mean, even in their 20s, they come home and they'll be like, I found these jeans on sale at Walmart, and they were only $3. And then they'll tell their brother, and they'll go out, oh, yeah, let's go to Walmart now. And I'm like,
that's great.
Wow. Okay. But most of my kids own houses and are doing, like, we always were like, okay, we'll save up and we'll have money to help them, and they haven't needed help.
Isn't it nice?
Yeah. Well, stay away from credit card debt.
Now I fear, though, that my children are doing much better than we were at their age.
Yeah.
And I'm
I'm like, ooh, are their children going to learn what they learned?
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's hard. Yeah. It was easy for me. I had to do it.
Yeah.
You know.
But they still do it. I mean, they still... I remember they going to the grocery store. I come down here on vacation, and Linda and I go to the store with the kids, and she takes half the kids and half the list, and I take the other half. And I go to buy something, and they're like, no, Aunt Sue, this one's a better deal. You know, they're telling me. And I'm like, oh, okay, because we have to, you know, we have to bargain shop. But, I mean, they...
Well, you pray for their wives.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will take
it's
that
hard if
mantle.
You have the money.
Yeah.
To not be lazy about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was easy for me. I just didn't have the money. It was
Yeah.
You actually wanted a paper towel. Mm-hmm. To like budget for it, you know, so it was just an automatic.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
They see the value, like, though. They know how hard it was to get a house.
Yeah, but they don't live the way I did.
No,
they don't have to, and that I don't know if I would have done it if I didn't have to.
Yeah,
Jill looked back at pictures at a certain age, and she said, "Mom, why are there ruffles on the bottom of my pants?" And I said, "You were getting taller all the time." I couldn't afford
another,
you know, and I made That's most funny. Of Jill's clothes. Wow. She finally stopped wanting me to at junior high. But she wore a lot of dresses because she loved them more than pants. Mm. But when she was very little and didn't know anything, I would just put ruffles on the bottom of the pants. And I went to Stretch and Sew and learned how to make t-shirts. So I made shirts for Scott.
Yeah.
And stuff for her, and yeah, they outgrow those things and don't want you to do that anymore. But I made it work when I didn't have much.
I think those are some things that we have learned that the young moms today don't know about. You know, I have a sewing machine, but I don't know how many of the young moms have a sewing machine, and I went to Stretch and Sew too and made t-shirts. I even made pants for Carl.
Wow. Well, like Jan said, if what they're saying, if we end up in a recession, then I think a lot of young families are going to be
maybe
learning
we'll have
some
more opportunities.
Yeah,
for them too.
I think that when all this discussion, I think of years ago when we got a gift from someone, we loved it. Mm-hmm. Now, buy somebody something that you love, that you think they'll love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Forget
it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm.
Or everyone has to be registered before they get married. They can't,
just
appreciate a gift from somebody from there, what they like, and use it. I mean, there's a lot.
That's a discontent, isn't it?
Yes.
Covetousness.
That's part of... Like you never go when you're growing up, you never really got anything unless you needed it. That's the way we were brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Unless you needed something, you didn't. But now it's like
I bet you remember every toy you were given.
I had one toy. I had one doll for Christmas.
Yeah. I remember
one Christmas gift each and fruit in the stocking.
Yeah, that's
one thing that when I was my mother and grandparents. Was my family, and even as a little tyke, they included me in all big decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they were moving, going to move away from one area, they had to move away from one area to another. Peggy, what house in this area do you like? What house do you think we should buy?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whether they took my advice or not was beside the point. It gave me the feeling as a child, I am included. I'm part of this family.
Yeah.
And I'm part of the decision making.
It's kind of like what Linda was talking about, teaching her kids at the store how to do that.
Exactly.
Well, even I would come down on vacation and Linda and Jim would be having a discussion about Jim's business, and the kids would still be sitting around the table. And at first I'm like, why are they, this is adult conversation, because when we were growing up, this is adults, you kids go someplace else. Mm. Well, every one of her kids has learned, they could run a business, because they've been in the thick of it and understand, you know, all those things, because they were, even if they weren't asked their opinion, they absorbed all that conversation, all that discussion, all that knowledge, you know? Mm. And it's like you said, Peggy, to be included and to learn that whole process, it's just invaluable. It's amazing.
That's awesome. Seems like the kids today, my husband said this, so it's not my original thing, but he said, we're supposed to be training them to be adults. Mm-hmm. You know, the adults that we want them to be.
Right.
Yeah.
And they just want them to be able to get along with their peers and be, you know, do kid stuff, be, you know, that's, it's like they're not going to be kids forever.
Well, maturity,
Where you go out in the world, you're going to hear the word wrong.
Yeah.
You know, try thinking you're right about everything when you get a job. You know,
you're not going to be as important as you think you are.
So it's about training them to be godly, responsible adults. Mm-hmm.
But what if you and your husband decides that you have to go to work? How is that going to work?
You submit to them.
Well,
yeah.
And pray about it.
As long as it's not sin.
Right.
Yep.
And let them know that what you really feel, my job is in the home, but if you insist I go out and work, I will do that. I'll be obedient to you. And ultimately, it's his decision, and he's the head of the house, right. And God will deal with him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, and find out what his motives are for wanting
him.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
is it
yes.
Because I'm spending too much money? Is it because you want me home more? You know, if you feel like if I'm out that much, I might as well be making money, you know, or...
They did surveys about women who work and
more.
About how much money is actually made.
Yeah.
And it's surprising when you have to add everything up, new wardrobe, transportation,
childcare,
convenience meals,
and whatever it is, meals now. It's surprising that you don't really make as much as you think.
Nope.
Or you lose.
So, like, you have to consider all that.
But there could be a lot of reasons.
Yes.
I mean, she may not be being careful with the money.
Yes.
Right. She's short every month.
Yes.
And so that's his solution.
Right. Yes, right. Absolutely.
You know, like Bobby said. You know,
figure
out what's driving
if they have to do child care, you know. I mean, I know some young couples. And I know the women's heart's desires would be to be home with their children.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
But they're working because they went to college, and some of them have college debts, and some of them don't. And they got high-paying jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But they pay thousands for daycare. Mm-hmm. Thousands of them for daycare.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the kids are always sick from being in daycare.
Well, they bring them home to the parents.
And then they're home, and the parents are sick.
What was being said and what Lucy said is in that last paragraph on page 73 about an honest appraisal of wife's income. How much they spend on all those things. Mm-hmm. And in child care and taxes and the clothing and fast food when you can't get home in time to cook a meal. It's true. You can end up losing.
You do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that makes it really tough. And that child care thing, you know, you'd probably do a much better job raising your kids yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You get
you're allowing somebody else to raise your children.
Critical race.
Training. It's a spiritual battle, though, because our culture is just so against what God's plan is.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically, you know, like you said, you're only a housewife or whatever. I mean, that's totally our culture's like, you know, do this for you. You got this in you. You got potential. You know, it's a spiritual battle.
Well, and you have to take care of yourself. You have to work because what happens if you get divorced? You have to be able to raise your kids. You have to have that career to protect yourself and your kids.
Right. You have to be independent from your husband, just in case.
Yeah. Just in case.
Right. Yeah.
Well, now, I just want to say, that's wrong thinking.
Yes. Absolutely.
I will say one other thing.
But it's a choice. It's a materialism.
Yeah.
You know, you see kids, like you were talking, Linda, they want a fully furnished house with all the new stuff. And it's taken you how many years to acquire all of that?
Yeah, they don't
with the sacrifice.
They want
multiple. So it's it comes down to greed and the material.
I think there are things even more important than that. There are people here who have worked, and that's not opposing necessarily to what God wants you to do. But there are some other things to consider. And this is something my husband always said. He did not want me out of the home around other men.
Mm-hmm.
Not because he didn't trust me, but he mm-hmm. did not trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been marriages even within the Christian
absolutely
that have had ugly consequences mm-hmm. from that.
Yep.
So it's not just the money and all those
yes.
those other needs. There mm-hmm. are other things to consider.
Oh yeah.
But that comes to the heart, though.
Mm-hmm.
If you are, if you you're going out, if you're married, you trust your husband to go to work and not be unfaithful. Now, if he begins an adulterous relationship, it's his heart. Just like us, if we went out and had
that's right, but we are under
right.
his authority in our home.
Just to go on what she's
and
saying.
And so, and as a Christian husband, that was something he was concerned about.
Oh,
and I will tell you. As a single teacher, I had a couple experiences. I was very naive, but I saw, you know, men that would potentially take advantage, and you just have to be very alert to that. And your husband is protecting you
yes.
from those things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's
yeah.
just
that.
That's just
yes.
a comment.
Along you're those lines, there's something I've never been able to figure out how it works. Is if we are to submit to our husbands and do, you know, be their helper, and yet we're working, aren't we almost submitting to our boss?
Yes, you are.
And
yes.
then we have two masters.
Yes, you mm.
And if this master says you have to work late, and this master says, yeah, I don't want you to work
that's
late.
That's a problem.
It causes
tension. That's a problem. Mm-hmm.
And if you're, you know, because we all have a deceitful heart, If you go out in the workplace and you start hearing how lovely you look,
that's the first warning.
What yeah. a good worker you are,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
da da da. You know, and you've got anything that's a little lacking, maybe.
I can
we have to live in the world, but at yeah. the mm-hmm. same time, there's protection that God has built
yes.
into the
yes.
structure of the marriage and the home,
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
it's even like Linda got our other sister said to Linda, you know, like. Your kids aren't socialized because you're homeschooling them, you know, or you're brainwashing them. And she said, yes, I am, and I'm proud of it because I'm the one putting the foundation, not, and I'm not, my gosh, you look at what's going on out in the secular schools today. It's like,
mm-hmm.
talk about brainwashing. But, you know, we do still have to be in the world, but what's the expression about, like, wise as, I won't be able to think of it, it's biblical.
Wise as a serpent.
Like, naive as a dove and wise as,
wise
you know,
as
at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You yeah.
Discernment.
But, like,
discernment.
I mean, everybody, Jan and everybody's a good point to the fact that, you know, your husband, he's meant as a protector. And, I mean, being a single person, I've had that with my dad. I have it now with, like, Jim takes it seriously that I'm a single woman, and if I ask him for advice, you know, he's happy to provide that and provide counsel. And same thing with our leadership in the church, our pastors and elders. You know, God created that structure. And early, before I became a Christian, I'll admit, I was women's lib. I could do anything the guys could do. And now I'm like, I'm so thankful I don't have to do with the men.
Yes.
I'm so thankful to have their protection.
Well, I want to get back to Linda's question about what do you do when you've got a boss who wants you
two
to stay.
Two masters.
Like, right. You can't have two masters. Your husband has to be the one. If that happens, I would think that there should be some discussion between the husband and wife about their role at work.
Mm-hmm.
That would have to change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you read Proverbs 31, like if you look at this woman did work, like she was industrious. But I find you can be, like some people, you can be industrious at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. God has blessed me in being industrious and making money at home, even if I'm not, you know.
Out of the house. Ever.
Yeah, by yeah. selling things and stuff like that. So if you have the right attitude, I find God will, you know, he blesses you if you submit under him, like he will bless you.
Mm-hmm.
He will. He will help you save money. You know what I mean? He will give you things to sell. He will do. He will. He does help, you know.
And yeah. it comes down to prayer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. God, you know, don't we seek him first?
Mm-hmm.
we should be seeking him first for all of this.
There's a lot of corporations that were started by women in the home. Mm-hmm. You know, so that shows you it's possible.
Mm-hmm. That cookie lady.
Okay.
How about you, cookie? Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your understanding. Lean not on the Lord.
Ways
all
your
ways. Yes. He'll direct your path.
Yep.
He'll give you the desires of your heart because he changes the desires of your heart.
Right.
He changes. I mean, this was many years ago, but I mean, because I was a divorced single mom, I did want to not have to depend, you know, that sort of thing. So when I married Jack, I was making more money than he was, and I've told this story. We were doing fine. We were doing great financially, whatever. I was his first wife, so I don't know what he had expectations, but I can remember getting ready for work in the morning, and my husband is a foodie. Some of you have heard my stories before, but the weight of my husband's heart is definitely through his stomach. Okay, who does this? But he would get up in the morning and say to me, "What's for dinner?" I'd be working. I mean, I said, I was making more than he was, and I had, you know. But I can remember being in the bathroom and thinking, "How the heck do I know? If you're so concerned about dinner, you make it." and I remember being, you know, really taken. That the Lord just took me back like with that.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is not right. And it was like a process after that where I just wasn't happy at work. Mm-hmm. I wasn't happy no matter how much money I was making. Mm-hmm. And him and I had that talk, and it was really kind of a neat thing because he took on me and two kids. And I can remember thinking, I just feel like I should be home. And how do you feel about that? And he said, quite honestly, I know I probably shouldn't say this in in too much company or whatever, because he was a new Christian, and he said, "I like the idea of taking care of you and the kids."
Aww.
And I never looked back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that's beautiful.
And they thought I was nuts. They thought I was crazy. And then a year later, I think I got out in '87, and then they had the stock market and the mm-hmm. real estate, and yeah. people were coming to me and saying, "What did you know? What did you know?" I left real estate. I had 30 listings.
Wow.
Just gave it over.
Wow.
And it didn't make sense to me either, but then God's ways are so much higher than ours. Mm-hmm. It made no sense to me. Mm-hmm. And I had a chance to get into basically be a partner at this one real estate office, and I just didn't have peace about it. They weren't Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, well, Lord, they're offering me this, and years from now it could be this. And it's like, I could blow on it, it could be nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And because they weren't, you know, I don't want to be unequally yoked with
right.
unbelievers and whatnot. So it's been interesting. But I just thought that was how do I know? If you want dinner, make it yourself.
You know, but that's just the example of how God has provided mm-hmm. for you when you were obedient to the
yes.
word.
Yes.
And
well, also
that's an example
immediate
that
conviction that obviously yes. you knew what the word was, and when you thought that, you were like,
all that. Flesh, basically, and worldly thinking coming in, because it was like I'd already been through a divorce, so I don't, you know, do I want to be vulnerable? Do I want to, you know, whatever? Mm-hmm. But I mean, I did daycare and I did other things, and I'm a coupon queen. Back then, I certainly was. I mean, not so much now, but you know.
Yeah. So the Lord, when we submit to what the Lord wants mm-hmm. for us mm-hmm. as women, He's going to provide mm-hmm. whatever it is we need. And we're almost out of time.
Can I make a quick comment?
Yes.
Really quick.
Yes.
I'm thinking about all this, and I really see a place for older women in their families and even just in friends. If you see families, I'm thinking of some of the younger people in my family and Larry's family, and they're struggling. Mm-hmm. There's like, should the wife go back to work? Should they not? We want to be able to have vacations. We want to be able to go out to eat, things like that. And there are things that, not only just explaining things, but things that you can do. When there's any holidays, birthdays, it's a great excuse, if you have the money, of course, to give them gift cards so they can go out to eat. to take the kids somewhere that they wouldn't be able to take them. To kind of take some of the pressure off.
Mm.
And also have a lot of fun when you're taking the kids places. So
yeah, the joy of grandparenting.
Yes, mm-hmm. And great grandparenting.
I would do that. I would do that as an aunt too. Yes. Like, I would. Yep, I would give them a gift card and say, "And babysitting comes with this."
Yes, you know, kind exactly. Of
and yeah. They could have a night, you know, mm-hmm. dinner out.
Mm-hmm. Everybody mm-hmm. needs an aunt like you.
Absolutely. Okay. Since we're getting close to finishing up. Hopefully you've done your lesson and question 6 about being self-disciplined. I think many of us struggle with that self-discipline. That's something that you need to do. Diligence, I'm learning to myself put off that laziness and put on diligence. It's so easy for me to just push that snooze in the morning. And not get up, but that's something the Lord wants us to do. We also, as women, set the tone in our families, and that saying, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy, is so true. Mm-hmm. And when you have a heart that's committed to glorifying the Lord, your attitude is going to come out. Your selfishness will be laid aside. You'll be able to say Psalm 118:24. Did I give that to anybody? Psalm 118:24. Well, I just... this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Well, when I say that to myself, I say, I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I think it's a good thing for us to do, to start our days, to think about rejoicing in what we have, the benefits that the Lord has given to us, the joy that we have in the Lord, the blessing we have in our families and our friends and our church family. Remember that we should be optimistic about the sovereignty of God in our lives. I think that gives us a sense of peace and a sense of
security.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because there's so much stableness throughout the world now. Mm-hmm. Our homes should be a haven. And when we have that peace, our homes will be that haven and not the battleground that people face outside of the home. So I would encourage you to read Psalm 37 about do not fret. That's such a good chapter because there's so many things that are out there to be fretting about that we don't need to fret about. Mm. As we delight ourselves in the Lord, He will give us the desires of our hearts. Mm-hmm. Trust in the Lord and do good. And this is kind of what you said, Bobby. Dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness. So there's that word again, cultivate. You know, just mm-hmm. be working at it. Be fertilizing your life with the Word of God and pulling out the weeds of idleness, discontent, selfishness, and He will give us the desires of our heart.